a big shot in complex numbers. A professor who wrote a textbook on complex numbers. The ancient Chinese hardest professor I ever had in my life. The king of the first day is like, my philosophy is teaching is I do easy pop, you do hard pop. But so when we're studying the complex numbers, he's showing us how we were able to solve some problems without detail. If you want, we can jump into it. So some problems within the real number system are impossible to solve. And in fact, Richard Feynman laid down a challenge to the mathematicians of the world, and he said, I can solve any class of mathematical problem using just real numbers. And the mathematicians came back and said, you can't solve this one without complex. In fact, or this one, or this one, or this one, or this one. And when you expand the number system to include complex, some of the problems that are literally impossible to solve in real become trivial. Bang, I solved them. I fell out of my chair when I was a student. It was embarrassing.
Do you believe that's the result of an infinite mind that has structured creation with those things, and that there is even more that nobody needed to discover?
Well, I can't say much about the nature of God's head. Other than, yeah, I think there's so much more. There's clearly a universe that reflects a logical order and structure. That just as Einstein was saying, if this is a randomly happenstance universe, why is there order? Why is it logical? Why is it moreover, why is it comprehensible to us? And in such eerie little ways, like why do mathematical explorations that are centuries before anyone figures out, oh, these are useful, well, how does that connect? What's the connection to all this? And so I think it strongly suggests that there's a logical order and architecture to the universe. And so of course, reading up on this thing and reading mathematical philosophers, I'm not a philosopher. My background is mathematics, and mathematicians were taught to say a lot of things with a few characters. Philosophers are taught to say very few things with lots of words. Reading these things, like, here's the point. So I was on an interview reading this one naturalist who was grappling with why are we able to understand the universe through mathematics? Why are we so well equipped for dealing with this? And some of the standard evolutionary things, they just kind of fall apart. And she looked like she was back to her corner, and she said, it's just a happy coincidence. So that's extraordinary. We have yet another person that are perfectly willing to believe the extraordinarily improbable, instead of just saying, well, it looks like it was made that way, like a piece of software or an engine. It was designed that way. Any questions? Do I need a whiteboard? Okay, good.
The aha moments. When you're working on a problem for a minute, quite a while, and suddenly, as you said before, the beauty and simplicity of the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think of the example that Hawking gave of the ripple on the lake that gave him Hawking's radiation.
Oh, okay, right.
Now my question is, why is it so difficult to get that aha moment? Have we got to do the work?
See, my technique for eureka moments involves alcohol and lack of sleep. Actually, about half the time, it's a matter of perspective, I would say. I don't know how many times I've been wrangling with some problem, just banging my head on the wall. And you know what I have to do? I go for a bike ride. I have to go do something else, go cook enchiladas, go stuff my face with food, go watch a movie, play a video game, something just to disengage my brain and then come back to it with a fresh pair of eyeballs. And if I can't do it with my eyeballs, I go to someone else. Hey, what do you think of this crazy problem? I actually had people much smarter than me in mathematics departments come to my office. I've always got chocolates and lollies in my office. Because I noticed the power of chocolate, someone's freaking out. But can you choose to guess the worst of every chocolate? Oh, thank you. So people come in my house and walk down and talk, yeah, sure, it's like, what's in your mind? Well, I'm trying to solve this problem, and they fill this part out. I have no idea what this person's doing. And then, that reminds me of the such and such and the so-and-so. Oh, cool, that's great, thanks, Ron. Okay. Sometimes you just need to bounce things off someone else. I'd say a lot of it is perspective, how you're looking at things. You can get so locked into a perspective, you can't just see, oh, there's a really simple little, you twist this thing, bang, you're solid. Yeah. Although I'm sure alcohol and sleep deprivation would hurt.
Anyone else? For a moment there, I thought that you left everyone with clarity.
What was that?
Just what you were talking about earlier, there was a limited number of universes.
Oh, multiverse kind of thing.
Possible, there would be a combination of continents and order and things to get what we're experiencing now.
Yeah, so I would say that the multiverse hypothesis, it still involves an incredibly improbable coincidence. If you have an infinite number of possible universes and you happen to land in the one where there's a logical structure to the universe, you still pick one out of infinite. It's
possibly the only one that works.
Exactly. So what's the probability of landing in the one that works? That's it. It's just probability. It's just simple probability.
Almost zero.
Well, so what's one divided by infinity? Don't say zero. Okay. I'm not with my red pen, no. So, okay, you get the idea, right? It's just fantastically involved. Now, I think it goes for a lot of other multiverse things as well, but I guess that's all that it all works. Yeah, your question, yeah.
In mathematics, you can prove that there are many dimensions, can't you?
Well, I think it depends on what field you're in. Like, if some pure mathematicians are running around with n dimensions.
Can you very easily deduct mathematically that one dimension may be the dimension of heaven that's as close to?
I have no idea. Thank you. So, in fact, of course, I've heard you, and I'm convinced of supernatural reality, but the mechanism? How does it relate to the world we live in? God, me. No idea. Right, in many ways, it's like that Cheshire Cat. You know, there's like a reality that peeks at us every once in a while. Oh. Right, how does that work? I have no idea. I mean, maybe there are mathematical constructs that relate to it, but we have the faintest idea. I mean, there's pure mathematicians in general, they don't care about its application. That's why they're pure mathematicians. They consider all of the mathematics the dark side. Right, so they just play around with that. And they may be finding these constructs that are perfectly rational, perfectly mathematical, that have no apparent relation to reality. I don't know, maybe 200 some years or something. Some reason, dang, this is a supernatural theorem! I don't know, maybe, but that's outside my field.
You looked into the relationship of mathematics and music, how math works within the realm of music.
Well, I actually, I'm a drummer, so I'm not a musician. I just like the bass things. So that's part of why I survived my degree, right? I get the bass stuff, bass drums. So it's funny because I'm an intuitive drummer. Like for years, if I was playing someone, it's like, oh, it starts off with 4/4, then it goes 6/8, and it's 3/4, and like 12/6. I'm like, I have no idea what that means. And so if it wasn't for some of the basics, I could just play something like this. I mean, like this, yeah, you're fine. Okay. So I had a very intuitive ear, so I could just play along, but I didn't know what the time signatures were. So I didn't have a formalized interpretation of what all this stuff meant. So actually, I would say in a roundabout way answering your question, a lot of mathematicians are musicians. Some of them are very good. Classical guitarist at the University of New Mexico. He used to close the door while I was practicing when he'd go in an opera store because he was amazing playing 12-string guitar. There's a natural intuitive connection between mathematics and music because beyond just the mathematical architecture. Mm-hmm. So certainly there's a mathematical structure for a lot of the music. So there's the time signatures. There's also the distances between the frequencies for chords and so forth. We have minor and major chords and the dissonance But then also you can extend it out to like the Indian chords of the Indian system, right? It's different. Doesn't it have 12 or something, maybe 12 notes? I forget. I just remember guitarist telling me, the Indians are just weird, bro. Okay. All right. So definitely, there is a mathematical structure to it, but I haven't really looked at it beyond the fact that I'm playing in 4-4. What is this? 6-8? Okay. Sorry.
Do you think that there's much more opportunity for more mathematical ideas to be developed? Or do you think we come to a sort of like a point where there's not much more going to be
unachieved? Good question. Well, yeah, we're done. They've done. You're solving everything. My gosh, no. Particularly like in mathematical biology. I mean, I have many ideas that I would like to pursue, but I'm a typical early career researcher and I'm running around begging for money because science is the noble pursuit of funding. That's what science is. So I'm constantly trying to get money. And if you want to get money, if you want to do science, you have to do something that, because these people with the grapevines, they're betting on you. They're like, oh, this one's got a cure for cancer, let's bet on him. Right, so, oh, he wants to play with some mathematical thing. Okay, go play somewhere else. Right? They want to put their money where something useful is going to come up, particularly if it's a cure, anything that deals with treatments for diseases. Very popular with funders. Certainly there's a lot of mathematical research going on, but ironically, in many ways, the amount of money going into the mathematics department pales in comparison to, say, engineering. Engineering is much more applied. So like devices, tangible things come out of engineering. I sit in bioengineering, and there are mathematicians that we sit in there, and we find ourselves pushed along, and it's like, we need to start looking at developing devices, or how to work with surgeons, and so we can improve what they're doing. Not so much doing theoretical things that may have a profound effect on. I'd say that that's where things need to go. That I think science has gotten to where they're kind of ignoring the crazy mavericks, the ones that are sitting out there just pondering the universe, and after 3 or 4 years of practically doing nothing, bang, it's an amazing discovery. So I think there's plenty of things. The way things are being guided is because science focuses money on very short-term, incremental research. Who knows, maybe that'll change.
Right, here we are.
Thank you. Are you going to hold it?
Yeah.
Sweet hands. Just kind of links into the question just then by this gentleman over here with the event of AI, machine learning. Are we going to see a place where our machines or computers are going to develop the formulas, the mathematical formulas? Or,
not me. That would be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how you train them.
Yeah.
Right, you have to train these AI, these machine learning devices. You have to have data sets and say, this is the objective, I want you to do stuff like this. But honestly, as I'm talking to engineers, I know that use AI machinery, they're black boxes. No one really knows what's going on inside the thing. And so many times they start spitting out solutions to problems or approaches to data sets that are a little bit outside of the realm that they're maybe trained for, and just go crazy, all these crazy results. And so they're telling me, we have to tweak it this way, tweak it that way. So they're doing the bubblegum baling wire kind of approach to dealing with machine learning. Because no one quite knows what's going on inside of them. Well, I find that disturbing. Right? Especially with stuff that they're starting to talk about, oh, we're going to use machine learning so we can be driving semi-trucks down their highways and stuff. Oh, crazy. I'm sorry, this parameter regime's a bit different, you have to die. I'm hoping there's plenty of testing. Maybe I'm a good turn. So that would be interesting. There's certainly, like when I say I did those derivations for my paper, a lot of those derivations I was helped with symbolic software. Because I mean, honestly, like those are compact versions. So the solutions that come out are just like pages and pages. And so I was able to use software to find some of these solutions. You still have to understand them. Think, so what does this term mean, and how does this balance with this, and then test it, see if it's right. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a way to do it, but I wouldn't hold your breath.
Just the last question, and I'm not sure whether this relates directly to what you've been saying, but there are those theorists that believe that with the rise of basically computer intelligence, that consciousness will develop as a result. Do you have any comments around that?
Yeah, no.
I mean, Roger Penrose is in the interesting mind.
Oh, yeah, from the 90s. Who knows? I mean, it's going to turn into a Frankenstein problem, right? So it's the very old problem people still have with Crouch Shelley and her story about, you know, man created the creation that wasn't the happiest about it. Right, so I don't know, maybe there'll be some bizarre happenstance. Maybe lightning will strike in just the right way, you know, I don't want to say. But I would say that it's quite improbable. Especially given like the machine learning thing, you know, just how in general stupid they are. Right? And then also I guess just using software. Oh god, using like poorly programmed software and dealing with like these crazy contradictory requirements that so many pieces of software. I mean, I suppose it's possible, but highly improbable. That's just my opinion.
Well, I'd like you to thank Sean for an amazing lecture tonight.
One question. Imaginary numbers are cool. that was my mission. I just wanted to teach imaginary numbers.
If you want to check out the bookstore, that's there. And if you want to make a donation or support him, those who come and speak,